The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance.
BTL, coming at you.
Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Monday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Yes, you are looking at a live shot of Matthew live from Minnesota. Matthew, how you doing, man?
Good. It is my first time in Winona, Minnesota, Mark, right up here on the Mississippi River. Outdoor Brand Team having their yearly media event. They bring in companies, Gamagatsu, Spro, Sunline, Big Bite, Denali, Dirty Jigs, and AFCO. And then all of the pros are in town, too. They bring in writers, videographers, some in-house guys, some guys from Bassmaster, from MLF, some freelance guys. And then for 2 or 3 days, you kind of get after it and kind of get the first look at some of the new products that these companies are offering. So pretty work intensive, pretty fun, great time for guys to kind of get together with, I guess, their teammates, if there is such a thing in the world of fishing, and then also the people who help them pay their bills. So an important week, but also a fun week at an interesting time of the year.
All right, very cool. We're going to have Mike McClellan. A little bit of confusion, and folks, you can blame me. I thought that Matt and Mike McClellan were going to be on the water this morning, but there were a forecast for thunderstorms or bad weather or something like that, and then it never came to fruition, did it, Matthew?
Yeah, really, this thing doesn't really get going until tonight, where we have a dinner and stuff. A lot of these guys come in a day early. Some of them had filming obligations to get done, commercials to shoot on the water this morning. So Mike, we're here in studio, so he didn't really have anything going on. So actually kind of getting some of the stuff set up, and I think we'll probably show the conference room. I mean, it's kind of like a mini iCast, Mark, a very mini iCast. It's like a micro iCast.
All right, there you have it, a micro iCast. It's pretty micro, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we're in just like a single little room here, and there's only like 30 people here, but...
Oh, that's all good. All right, another big event taking place this week besides what you have going on in Minnesota, the FLW Championship on a crowded, small body of water in Arkansas. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the FLW Cup takes place on Lake Hamilton this weekend, 7,200 acres. 50 plus guys, 4 full days of practice, and then 3 tournament days. So a solid week. We've talked about it on the show. I was able to do some media stuff on the water, shot some photos right before it went off limits for the anglers. And whoever lifts this cup is going to earn it, Mark. Yeah. Obviously, there's a section of the lake that is kind of the overwhelming belief is that it is going to play the most with the largemouth, possibly some schooling fish, water willow, docks, brush piles, a little bit of offshore. But man, that is going to get small quickly, especially if you have sunny conditions, 90 plus degree days. Almost everybody has a two. I mean, it's like they have kids. They have kids at Lake Hamilton just so they can tow them on a tube. Like, it's like, hey, we got to get our tube kids.
Yeah.
It's got some elements of Lake of the Ozarks in the Mid Lake region. It also kind of reminds me a little bit an Illinois lake, like a central Illinois lake, kind of down where you have like kind of grass that comes out on really shallow docks without much defining feature. You have water coming out of Ouachita up that's like really cold with some interesting backwater things. And it like I said, they're going to earn it. I don't think there's going to be a fish in that lake that won't see a bait by the time the final day comes around. So I think anything in the double digits each day would be good. And also wouldn't surprise me, though, if you see kind of what Clint Davis did on Ouachita last year, someone come in with, you know, a big worm or a brush pile and get a couple of those key bites, because there are big fish in the lake,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah, no, I agree. Quite possibly the toughest cup event, FLW Cup event, that we've seen in a long time.
I don't know. I really can't think of an easy one that they've had recently. I mean, Wheeler Lake in August, Ouachita a couple times in August here. I mean, they've been to the Three Rivers. I mean, there really has not been a Slugfest Cup in my recollection. Mike's sitting here off screen and he's racking his brain. Can you remember a Forestwood Cup where you were like, man, I wish I was in that when they're catching them? Yeah, no, this is not a fun fishing tournament for these guys. I mean, and you've seen the you know, the guys, the John Coxes, the Scott Martins, and those guys kind of consistently do well in these grind tournaments, you know, be in the top tens with like Brian Thrift and even, you know, Zach Bird just had a really good record there. He's one of the MLF anglers who's fishing in the cup this week on Hamilton. So it's a really strong field, a lot of new faces in it, but I'm a lot of the same faces that are cup contenders every year. One thing's for sure, we will not have a back-to-back cup champion, as Clint Davis is on the Elite Series. And the Angler of the Year won't be there with Mark Rose moving over to the Bass Pro Tour. So we already kind of went through that in a past show about who got in. Was it Jason Reyes who got in by like 8 million different things happening all at once?
I think so.
Got in by a point.
I think so. All right, the other event that took place over this past weekend, and I did not follow it that close. I actually, we had our first live bowling event over the weekend, so I was kind of tied up with that.
Oh, God.
But a stingy Central Open, and the guy absolutely kind of distanced himself on that final day to win.
Yeah, Wes Logan led the first few days, only came in with 10 pounds. The key to that tournament, Mark, was the falling water. I was talking with a couple of anglers who were competing in it, and, you know, you could get on a good frog bite, a good backwater bite, but then, you know, it'd drop a foot, it'd drop 8 inches before that. I think, like I said, it dropped about 3.5 feet over the course of the event. That ended up being a main river current deal.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of guys, I think, who were on them that I talked to who – they just lost the water. They just dropped the water out. It had been, I think, 6-7 feet high and dropped down. I'm interested to see, you know, when we get out and start filming and shooting some stuff here up in Minnesota, not that far from La Crosse, what the water looks like here, because it didn't look like it was, you know, that high or blown out. But tough event. I mean, you saw that on the schedule and you think, oh, they're going to smash it. Remember what Faircloth did with a frog there, what Ish has done with a frog there. I guess some really cool, what Biffle did with the bug there. Some really cool stuff in that. But yeah, tough tournament, earned the classic spot there.
Was that their last event, or do they have one more?
I think they have like two more.
Two. That was the first Central event, or the,
no,
the
there's
second?
Four.
Yeah, so that was the second event?
Yeah, they might have. I know they fish on Grand.
Yeah.
They had one on Toledo Bend.
I think you're right. I think it was the second one.
North, they've had one on Lake. Grand. Yeah, they had one on Smith Lake. So this was the third event. So the last one will be on Grand and then the championship.
All right. Very cool. All right. I want to let everybody know kind of what we're doing this week. Matt is going to be at this location all 3 days. We're going to do a morning show, then a little bit of bonus BTL. We're going to have a evening show at 8 o'clock Central. And quite honestly, man, I have no idea what to expect with that.
Yeah, I don't have any idea either. we'll just see what happens. I'm not sure how that's going to play out, but we'll see if we can get a couple cocktails in the guys. We've never had like an evening show with some libations spread into the mix. I mean, like I said, I've already suggested arm wrestling Michael Neal. we'll see what we get into.
Oh, geez. Yeah, Dave May, he may have to help us out on that one. All right, the other thing is tomorrow we're going to have Todd Faircloth on in the morning. And right now the plan is to be on the water in the morning, correct?
Yeah, we'll be on the water 100%. It just kind of depends on the signal, whether that'll be a phone or a Skype deal, Mark, kind of at the mercy of the cell phone towers, which is kind of really weird around here. It's like sometimes you got a full signal and other times you have no signal.
Yeah, and then on Wednesday, once again, we'll do a morning show. We're going to have Amart on from the water, and then we'll do another evening show, and that'll kind of wrap up our week.
I was thinking for Arid, can we just do like a conspiracy theory show, like nothing to do with fishing? Just ask him about like what he thinks about Area 51, government conspiracies, just the whole nine yards.
That would be interesting. That really would be interesting. Can you cook eggs in a microwave? You think he knows the answer to that?
Can you cook eggs in a microwave? McClellan says yes. Hey, I once saw Randy Howell cook walleye in a microwave. I'm sure you can cook eggs.
Wow. All right, man. Do you have a good weekend? I know you traveled on Sunday making your way up there.
Oh my gosh, I had a crazy weekend. So the girlfriend had a barrel race at Bartlesville, right?
All right.
And at the end of this deal, bear with me. You can listen to Mark talk about bowling for 20 minutes every show.
You
can listen
to me. I'm with you. I'm with you,
rodeo
man.
For 5 minutes.
I'm good.
So at the end, they do this thing called Mexican poker. This was like modified where, you know, you get everyone in there, they let a bull out, and then the last person sitting down wins $100. Well, this was like dope in a rope deal. So they had 10 people come down. They set a rope out on the ground for $100. The first 10 fans that got into this circle, and if you got out of the circle when the bull charged you, you were out, right? So last man standing gets $100.
Yeah.
Well, the announcer like really sets it up. He's like, folks, you know, this rodeo company's known for their bucking bulls. They're like, this one is straight from Mexico. This is the first time he's been out in the United States. They're not sure what to do with this thing. And I verified this later. So they let this, they get 10 people in there. And there's one lady, probably about 45 years old. I mean, this is the real deal. Like, I mean, you get smoked by these bulls. These things are no joke. So this bull comes out, and it looks like wherever it was in Mexico, it was fed like a mixture of like cocaine-laced hay. Because it is freaking angry. Like, it is so mad.
Well, they
like,
usually are, Matthew.
The ground. Well, it I got to tell the story without saying any bad words because I get fired up for it. I got to watch myself here. So it comes out, and it like charges through the circle. Well, like two people duck out, and it gets on this one guy's tail, and he runs around and he jumps over. Well, by then, like the rest of the people that are in there had seen this angry ass bull. Like three of them say, screw it. They just walk out of the circle and run. They're done. Even though they were fine. They just leave. So now the bull does like a whole lap around the arena, tried to hit everybody, and he ends up down in my corner where I am. I'm sitting on the fence, like I know what I'm doing. And so they end up moving the rope down. So it's like 30 feet from me. There are three people left, right?
Okay.
The lady and two dudes. So this bull turns around and he sees him and he charges and they scatter. And one guy kind of goes out. And another dude, and then the lady kind of has to like jump out of the way, and she lands on her hands and feet. Well, she's out of the circle. Well, she just gets up, turns her back to the bull, and starts walking to the side. And the announcer's like, honey, you may be out of the competition, but the bull doesn't even know he's in a competition. And about that time, that sucker went from 20 feet and hit her in the back, and it was ragdoll. She went about 10. Have you ever, like, in your athletic career, Mark, you ever heard that, thud where you're like, okay, he didn't just get hit. Like, that's like,
yeah,
like one of those where, you know, just human nature, you kind of are like, ooh, that's a sickening feel. That was her, except it happened 3 times in 30 seconds. She got ragdolled. She got up, spun around. He came back for round two, got her from the front. Then she was like kind of disoriented, crawling on her hands and knees. Then he shot her about 5 feet. The rodeo clown got trampled. They got her out there, put her on a board, sent her to the ER. Jeez. That was my night at Bartlesville. I'm just sitting there going, wow, for $100.
Wow.
You win more than that in a Wednesday night jackpot on Thunderbird, Mark.
Yeah, you're right. Wow. Carried her off on a stretcher.
I got the video. I'll send it to you.
Is she okay? Do you know if she's okay?
They chucked her over the arena because the bull was still in there.
Oh, geez, man. It's the clown's job to take care of the bull and get him back in the chute.
Yeah, they had like four people around that bull.
Wow.
But I'm conflicted, though. I didn't know whether to feel bad for her or be like, yeah, well, that's what you get when you go into a competition where your goal is not to get trampled by the bulls.
Would you ever do the running of the bulls?
No.
In Spain, you never do that?
No.
A lot of people do it, man.
What do you think the most extreme thing Mike McClellan has ever done? I mean, he's kind of measured, easygoing.
Rock climbing?
Very thoughtful.
Get it? Rock climbing?
Oh, we might have to bring him in the next segment. He's informing me that he used to be a bull rider.
I didn't say I was a bull rider.
No. Take a break. We'll get Mike in and come back and talk about that.
All right. Coming back with Mike McClellan. Everybody, stay tuned.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with live sight sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
AFCO has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know, how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's going to stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's going to keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from AFCO.
The Heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast-off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Aaron Martins here. I'm going to be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE x8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE x8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
The message is simple. Win. Coming in 2019, the Ducket Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DucketFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out. All right, we are back on a Monday, kicking off the week. with a special set of shows from Minnesota as you look at a live shot of Matthew and our good friend Mike McClellan. Mike, how you doing, man?
You sound pretty fired up for a Monday.
Dude, I had a great weekend.
That's awesome.
Just an outstanding weekend. I'm getting in shape. I've lost 12 pounds.
He's lying.
I am not lying. I'm really working hard to lose weight.
Text that he sent me from this weekend.
After the pizza we ate last night, the group of us went to a pizza place down the road, and I think we put like 10 pizzas away last night, so I have not lost any weight.
He sent me that. I go, cool, I'll be driving tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
What?
Yeah.
You were at a wedding.
Yeah.
You sent me a text that said, quote, I hate weddings.
Yeah,
You said you had a great weekend.
I did. I'm not a wedding fan. Dude, that was just 3 hours out of my weekend, okay? I'm not a wedding guy. I do not like getting dressed up and going to weddings. You know, great folks. Oh, Matt, you would appreciate this because it was a Thunder girl that got married to a kid that I coached ever since he was in junior high school, and there were – I don't know, maybe 15, 20 Thunder Girls there. And before they opened up the dance floor, they actually did a routine at the wedding reception with her in a wedding dress doing a Thunder Girls routine. It was pretty cool. Give it up to them.
Absolutely.
All right, Michael, greatly appreciate you taking time out. And Matthew and I thought that it would be cool to pick your brain a little bit and really kind of give the fans some insight on what these media events are all about. And really, and we've talked about this for all the years that we've had this show, about there is so much more to being a professional angler than what you are doing while you're on the water. So with the event that we have going on this week, I mean, kind of talk about the importance of these events and really what your involvement is.
It's pretty funny you said that. I actually talked to a buddy of mine from here in the La Crosse area that fished the Open last week, and it was one of his first Open events. You know, so he did the full practice deal. He was, you know, up at, you know, 4:30 in the morning fishing all day.
It's light for like 18 hours a day.
Exactly. You know, so he was complaining about, you know, how beat down he was. And, I mean, he actually acknowledged the fact. He's like, I don't know how you guys do this on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. And I'm like, you know, he's like, well, what are you doing up here? And I'm like, well, I'm coming up here for a writers' conference. And then he's like, you stack that stuff on top of competition. And, I mean, the whole thing about it, I mean, you can't see much of this mini iCast.
We'll show it around later after we get done talking.
But I was talking to Matt just a few minutes ago. I have been now with Spro for 15 or 16 years. I came on board with Spro in 2005-06 time frame to help them develop the mixed stick line. And the thing that's so cool about working with companies like Spro and Gamakatsu and Sunline and Big Bite is the input that we truly have with these companies. I mean, when I developed the mixed stick, I mean, yeah, I told them what I wanted the body to look like, I told them how I wanted it shaped, but I literally had to place a bill on the bait and use the bait to get it to get the right action I wanted. It wasn't one of those deals that somebody just sent and said, here's your McStick. So, I mean, it's really cool to have the involvement that we have. A lot of extra hours put in other than just fishing is what I'm getting at.
All right, so how does that work? You've been with them 56. Like, do you remember, like, how did you first even get with Spro? You say you hear, so I hear all you guys say that, like, oh, I've been with them for 10 years, but like, how did you get with them?
That's the cool thing about it. I mean, after the success that I had back in that era, I had just won the Open Championship, I'd won grand, and Spro was a company that was just getting their feet on the ground. I mean, the Rojas Frog had just, you know, really gotten legs under it, and they had a plan to bring all of the pros in and develop certain categories of baits. And with my knowledge of Table Rock, Bull Shoals, the Midwestern Lakes, they didn't have a stick bait in the line. So it was their mission to come after me to help them develop a stick bait line. And that's the cool part. I didn't go seeking them. They actually came.
Do you remember that call?
I do. Gentlemen, you know, I'm trying to remember if Sid was on board yet, but Tim Norman, mm-hmm. actually, I was at a tackle show, like a wholesale vendor show. He actually came up, introduced himself, said, "We want you to come on board with Spro and design baits." And I mean, it was pretty overwhelming to me because, I mean, I'm still fairly young. We're talking, you know, 12, 15 years ago. And I'm like, "You want me to design baits?" You know, and I'm like, "Well, how's this process work?" And he's like, "Well, you need to sit down and draw it out. You need to tell us the dimensions." And I'm like, fortunately, well, I fortunately had a little architecture background. So I had drawn a little bit, you know, throughout my school years, and it was one of those deals that it really is something I enjoy doing. You know, we draw up the plastics that we design for Big Bite. I mean, it starts with a drawing on paper. Now, some of these drawings are pretty rough. I mean, Creets might be on a napkin where mine are actually on graph paper.
Creets is on a placemat with a crayon.
Pretty much.
So wow. Then what? So you literally, he's like, design it. So now it's your job to go home, and you're like, okay, I like this about this, the Lucky Craft.
That's what's
and this
cool.
About this, and then whatever, and they'll do it?
What you're saying there is what the cool part of this is, because I wasn't affiliated with a hard bait company.
Right.
So I had thrown the Lucky Crafts. I had thrown, you know, Smithwick Rogue for years was the mainstay.
I'm trying to think of the others.
And then Megabass had just hit the market in a strong way about the time I had this mission to design the new Mixed Stick series. So I had thrown all the baits. There were certain characteristics about the Megabass I liked. Mm-hmm. There were certain things about the Rogue I liked. There were certain things about a Lucky Craft I liked. So basically, I was able to take all of those things that I liked about each bait, mesh it into one. And in my opinion, we nailed it with the Mixed Stick. You know, I mean, it's a bait that, you know, everywhere in the country now, people are catching them on it. A buddy of mine's in Louisiana this week redfishing with a Mixed Stick 115. I mean, people are catching all species of fish across the country on the Mixed Stick line. So I feel pretty cool to be involved in something like that.
Mike, how many prototypes did you go through?
You know, when they sent me the first batch, I literally cut bills off of a half dozen baits because I didn't like the action of anything that they had. And fortunately, the way the baits were designed and made, I could cut the bills off the baits. And then I was making, you know, bills out of CD cases or whatever kind of plastic, you know, I could get that was rigid enough to design and build bills. And fortunately, I think I nailed it about the fourth try. And I was kind of blown away myself because I'd put a bill on the bait, run down to the lake there in Bella Vista, stand on the boat dock, throw it, and you know, you could tell within two or three casts if this thing was going to do what you wanted it to do. And I think it was four baits I went through, you know, after cutting the bills off all six, when I finally got the right action, the right depth range. And man, I bundled that thing up in that blister wrap stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I had it in a box,
the bubble wrap,
yeah, but I had the bait in a box. I mean, we're talking a 4.5-inch bait.
Okay.
That it is in a box this big, bundled up in bubble wrap, yeah, so it doesn't get damaged getting shipped to overseas to actually be put into the mold and made. So it was a pretty intense process. I'm just being honest.
All right, let me ask you this, Mike. Was there ever one special Mixed Stick that you lost? All right, broke off, threw it on the bank, it snapped off, I don't know, some situation of which you went to extra measures to do whatever you could to get that bait back?
You know, I would love to sit here and tell you, yes, there's something about a bait when you start catching bass on it. But, I mean, with any of the baits that we use in this era, most of them have all become somewhat disposable. I mean, it's just the way it is. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, after I use a bait for 2 days or a week or whatever, I throw it away. I'll you know, maybe have them repainted. I'll have new colors put on them. But the thing about the Mixed Sticks as a whole is they're pretty consistent throughout. I mean, when you pull one out of the box, I don't get hung up in that deal of this one's got the perfect sound, this one goes the perfect depth, because they're all pretty consistent. So I really can't say that there's one specific Mixed Stick I've lost. Now, when I've only had one of a certain color in the boat, yeah, I've gone to great lengths to make sure I don't lose that bait, you know, and it does happen occasionally. You know, I've been, you know, chest deep, leaning over the boat trying to pluck one out of the top of a cedar tree, you know, underwater. And usually the water's pretty cold that time of the year when you're doing that stuff, so it wasn't pleasant.
All right, so we're talking about the sponsorship stuff. So answer this. Tell me you don't want to answer it or whatever.
What's
so
that?
You've been with them. You've had the Mixed Stick, what, 14 years now?
Yeah, 15,
I think. It's in the package. It says Mike McClellan on it. Your picture's on the back. You designed the bait.
Yeah.
So then you personally, I mean, how does that work? How do you make money off of that bait? Are you making money off of that bait for the past 15 years? Is that like you get paid to design it? Is it a royalty deal? I mean,
you know, without going into a lot of depth, it is royalty too. Okay. And that's the thing that's cool about working with Spro, Big Bite, Gamakatsu, the companies that are all here that I'm representing this week, is they all have a pretty similar plan in order. You get paid on what the bait sells at wholesale for, a royalty on every bait that's sold. So, you know, yeah, I want to sell as many of them as I possibly can, but that royalty goes as long as I stay in competitive fishing. You know, there does have to come a term that, you know, my kids and my grandkids aren't getting royalties on this bait.
But as
I mean,
as long as
I am in competitive fishing, you know, promoting, doing something in relation to competitive fishing, then I'll continue to get paid a royalty as long as I don't make somebody mad.
Is that the holy grail of sponsorships, to be on a royalty deal with a bait that is popular?
If you're working with the right companies, absolutely. You know, and honestly, the McStick has done well, but the new introduction of, I say new, I mean, the Rock Crawler's been around for 3 or 4 years now. I mean, we nailed it with the Rock Crawler. I mean, you know, growing up again, Midwestern Lakes, Lake of the Ozarks, you know, Table Rock, Beaver, we threw a variety of different crankbaits, but you know, you as well as I know, a Model A Bomber and a Wigglewort were two of the biggest baits that we threw in that era. There were always things about those baits that frustrated me. You couldn't cast a Wigglewort, you know. It was a great bait, but you couldn't cast it very well. The Model A Bomber didn't get to the right depth, which the Wigglewort didn't either. So I was able, when I developed the Rock Crawler, it's not a knockoff. I mean, we took a design, an idea, we made a bait that dives deeper, you know, with the original 55. I mean, you're talking about a bait that'll get 13 foot. You can't get to those depths, you know, with the other baits that I just mentioned. So, you know, it's cool, and it's been a hit. You know, we've got the original 55, we've got the 55 MD, and now we've just released the new 50. We've got all depth ranges covered now, the way I look at it, you know, and it's going well, and I'm excited to be involved in it.
All right, Matt and Mike, I want to go to the instant feedback. David in Wisconsin has a really good question. Wants to know, do you have any specific colors or runs that are done only for you that are not available to the public?
I'm not going to lie about it. Yeah, and the reason I do is because I've got a buddy at home that I get to paint certain colors for me. The thing about it is about every color I've ever had painted that does end up being a good color is being introduced. In fact, I'm going to show you four new colors, or one new color specifically, that you know, Littner and I kind of talked about a couple years ago. I got it painted, we've used it now for a year or two, and it's going to be available. So most of those colors eventually trickle in to the consumer, but I do have probably at all times, you know, 3 to 5 colors that the consumer doesn't have on hand. I don't know that it always makes a huge difference because we've got so many awesome colors already. But it is cool to be on a body of water when you know it's getting heavily pressured, you know there's a lot of guys throwing a Rock Crawler, to know you've got something a little different.
What were you, was that at ICAST? Was it, I don't even know if it was you, were telling me about one of the new McStick colors. And I mean, not like to jam the McStick down people's throats, but the color deal. What was that?
It was pretty crazy. You know, we try to release 3 to 5 new colors every year or so. Mm-hmm. And last year we came with 4 new colors called Nanco Reaction, PM Twilight, Ghost Purple Magic, and MCIU. The PM Twilight is a color that is, it's really a little bit off the wall. I mean, it's like almost a banana yellow with a little bit of brown. I mean, it's got a lot of different stuff going on. And I had thrown all 3 of the other colors. You know, I'd thrown Nanco Reaction. It looked like shad. You know, I threw these MCIU and the Ghost Purple Magic, and it's like, these are the colors I think I should be throwing. And just off the wall, I think my son called me that day, and I'm like, you wouldn't believe how good they're biting a jerkbait. He's like, well, what colors are you catching them on? I'm like, well, I've caught them on, you know, these 3. And he's like, why haven't you thrown PM Twilight? And I'm like, man, that's just kind of hard for me to do. It's just an odd color.
It's not ugly, but it's...
And, dude, I tied that PM Twilight on, and it was the one they preferred. I caught all 3 species. I caught big largemouth. I think, you know, if you look back at my post from earlier in the year, I had a largemouth, almost 6 pounds the day. I had big smallmouth. I had big spotted bass. And they love that PM Twilight. So, you know, that's one of those deals. I firmly believe that fish get conditioned to seeing certain color baits.
Just like sound and vibration.
Exactly. And I really think that every time there's something new that hits the market, they wouldn't bite the traditional colors as well as they would those new colors. And I truly think it's they get conditioned to seeing the same colors over and over. And when you throw something new in, it's the deal.
So if you had to change one thing, then if you could either come out with a new vibration, a new shape, or a new color, so basically sound, shape, or color, which one do you think new that they hadn't ever seen? Which one do you put the most important?
Man, that's tough because I think all three of those things are really important. You know, I think some of that goes back to whether you're talking about a hard bait.
Yeah, okay, let's just say table rock.
If you're talking about a hard bait, I think colors probably are, because table rock is one of those lakes that fish really feed on sight. If you've thrown my baits, most of my baits are very subtle. Mm-hmm. They've got a little bit of noise, but they're very subtle. When you're fishing clear water lakes, that's important. Not to say those baits won't still catch them in a little bit off color, but they feed on sight, and color, in my opinion, is the biggest thing. Now, when you start talking about plastics, mm-hmm. I think, you know, the shape can be way more critical there. You know, again, you know, 10 years ago when the football jig with a big creature bait as a trailer was the deal, it's like that's all you had to throw. And it's like now I feel like I have to mix up my trailers.
And didn't you start going with a
I've been throwing a little big bite twin tail just recently.
But also, I remember you went through a couple of years where you threw a stick bait on the back. Didn't
yes,
you?
I did. Like a fat stick or something. A stick style bait on a football jig. I remember Amistad, Kentucky Lake, even Table Rock. I mean, there was a number of tournaments where a stick trailer on a football jig got it.
So you're saying, take Grand, for instance.
Yeah.
You're saying you could have fish and you've got your brush piles and they get it. They're get conditioned to that profile of the jig.
Exactly.
And you're going to get more bites, even though it may look like crap to you. You're going to get more bites by changing the profile of your jig, even though it's the same jig. Just by changing the back, you can alter.
Oh, 100%.
Really?
I mean, the deal with the stick trailer, we were at Amistad, Gin Clearwater. I mean, I'll throw one when I have to, but I'm not a big stick thrower. Crete's, you know, calling me, blowing my phone up, dude, they're eating, you know, he was throwing the big Magnum stick. What is it, a seven and a half inch Magnum stick? And he's like, dude, they're eating it up, you know, and I don't want to throw a stick. And I'm like, you know, I'm throwing my football jig, I'm getting a bite or two every now and then. So I throw a 6-inch stick on the back of my football jig. And I mean, the first throw I make to this group of fish that's out here on top of a ridge, I mean, it doesn't get to the bottom. And I'm like shaking one off, and I thought, boy, is that a fluke? And I reel it in, and I throw back out there again, and another one gets it, you know. And it's just like unbelievable to me how much better they bit the bait just by changing the profile and the plastic trailer I was using.
Wow. All right, I want to do this. A couple of questions from the instant feedback. And then, Matt, why don't we start to walk around, and you can kind of go through some of the stuff if you're cool with that. Will that
Absolutely.
Work?
Yeah.
All right. Austin in Alabama wants to know, is the football jig still as effective as it was years ago?
You know, I definitely believe so in the right situations. I mean, if you guys have been watching my Facebook or Instagram Insta story just over the last week, 2 weeks, I've been hitting table rock for a couple hours a day. And, you know, you have to find them. But when I get around them, they will absolutely smoke a football jig right now. You know, I've been throwing a 3/4 ounce football jig, peanut butter and jelly smoke, old school, you know. I mean, and I've been throwing actually a Big Bite Twin Tail. We came out with some new colors in the Big Bite Twin Tail just recently, and it's a perfect trailer for when them fish are deep under docks. I've been catching them roughly 23 to 28 foot deep, and I mean, a lot of times it doesn't get to the bottom before they get it, but you know, you get in the right docks and the right shade and the right depth, and a football jig is mighty effective even today.
Mike, I don't think I've ever asked you this. I love throwing a football jig. You know,
yeah.
When I'm not throwing a rig, I'm throwing a football jig.
One of the three things.
Exactly. What I'm curious about, is it just a condition or, I don't know, some element that you use a flared skirt rather than a normal skirt? Do you prefer the flared skirt?
You know, I do, and I trim probably every football jig I take out of the package that is a full-skirted football jig. I will trim it one way or another just based on the time of year. You know, when I feel like a bait, when the fish are really wanting a finessey-looking bait, you know, I trim it like a spider jig. You know, I trim the collar above the head, just barely above the head, so it really just has a little spike, and I actually thin the lower section. Right now, though, I mean, I feel like when a fish is in this period of the year, they're not going to eat a lot, but when they eat, they want to eat something bulky and substantial. So, I mean, I've been throwing almost a full skirt, except I trim the upper part of the skirt a little shorter than the lower. So when that skirt hits, that upper part flares more. And I think any action that you can create, you know, when you've got a full skirt on a jig, it tends to kind of lap together when it gets to the bottom. But when you trim one of them shorter than the other, it will separate them and flare when it hits the bottom.
Hypothetically here, mm-hmm. let's say, I'm just asking this in mm-hmm. general. Let's say a guy's got a couple of big tournaments coming up around the Ozark region in, mm-hmm. in early.
You wouldn't know who that guy
in
is.
In early to mid-October, yeah, Mike.
You are you really going to go down that path, Matthew?
You're going Jeez. Down that road. I thought we were here to talk about the mini icons.
Are you how kidding guy, me?
How would a guy trim his football jig?
I think, you know, you're getting into a period there where I would be trimming it a little bit shorter. You know, I think those fish start to get a little bit more active, and they start moving around a lot more, and I just like a jig that's a little more subtle profile then.
All right, let's show them stuff.
Yeah. Let's do it.
That's taking advantage of the entire situation.
It is.
You're damn straight it is. Wait. All right, I can't really see what's going on. Let's start. Okay, so this is just kind of it's really empty and it's not fully set up yet because we're, like I said, we're here a day early. That's where all the stuff, they ship all the stuff in. Like, look, you could actually see like the Japanese like writing and stuff on the boxes. I think that's
okay.
Oh yeah. Something. Yeah,
yeah. Got him.
Well, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
All right. So, but I mean, you know, we're starting here. I mean, Gamakatsu, I mean, fortunately, you know, with the designing stuff that I've got to do, I designed a new hook for Gamakatsu last year, the new hybrid worm hook. Gamakatsu's got a lot of new jig heads, different things at them. Basically what we're doing here is they bring in all the pro staff, all the teammates, as Matt called us. You know, some of us would call each other teammates, but I don't know about everybody, but, you know, we all come in here. A lot of this stuff was introduced at ICAST. We generally try to go to somewhere the fishing's going to be good. You know, we're here on the Mississippi River. We're two or three pools above where Red Crest is going to be here in a couple weeks. And we're going to go out and fish these new products with media people like Matt and from other media sources. And we're going to get photos, we're going to get story ideas, and we're going to get a first-hand opportunity to take these new products and hit the water.
Can you show us anything? Is there anything new
there? Yeah, I mean, you know, well, like I said, I mean, the new, we've got it all boxed up here. But, you know, this hook was released last year, but this is the new hybrid worm hook. It's a G-Finesse series, nano-coated. I mean, it's one of those hooks you can use for everything. I mean, Carolina rigging, Texas rigging. You can put it on a hard head if you've got the opportunity to change your hooks on a hard head. It's just a everyday go-to hook for me. Drop shot in the smallers. It comes in number one all the way up through number seven. So you got every size you could even imagine. And it's like myself and Drew Cook were talking last night in the parking lot. Most guys that used to use an offset round have completely quit using them because they have replaced it with this new hook. The new bottom knocker, the Cobra head, I mean, you know, there's just a lot of different baits. This bottom knocker comes in a variety of sizes from, I think it starts at a 3/16, goes up to 3/8 or a 1/2 ounce. You know, a lot of this stuff's new, so I don't know all the details on it, but it's one of those, you know, finesse style baits. It's all of them are with one-aught nano-coated Gamakatsu hook. It's one of those situations that, you know, when you're needing to finesse something, throwing a shaky head, you know, a finesse worm, something like that, you can get it done with that. Then you come over here to the Spro booth, and, you know, Spro and Gamakatsu, the way this deal works for us is it's kind of a marriage in a sense. Spro represents Gamakatsu in a certain part of the U.S., and then Gamakatsu Japan has the other part of the U.S., but we work as a team. So a lot of stuff I do with Spro, Gamakatsu is tied to directly, but then I do separate things with Gamakatsu as well. Then you start talking about new colors. You know, we just released brand new colors. I mean, these are hot off of the boat. I mean, they probably just got shipped in 6 or 8 days ago, if even that long ago. And these are the new colors of the rock crawler. They're going to be available in all sizes. You've got, you know, some of the colors are just good sellers. Cellmate is one of those, you know, Spro colors that's been great forever. You've got Nasty Shad is another one we released. The one that I'm probably the most excited about is this Ghost Brim. I mean, it to me is just one of those colors. And I got to give, you know, Littner a little pat on the back for this. He actually showed me a beta a couple years ago that was similar to this. And I basically took my painter and we did a spinoff color of it. I actually threw this bait the first time on Havasu. What's that been? 3 years ago we were at Havasu?
2015.
So it's been, you know, 4 years in my box and it's just now hitting the public. So this is going to be one of those baits that really good. Up north, the real perch, I mean, it's that yellow perch, you know, striped perch, whatever people want to call them. And so that's cool. Then you've got... you know, we all get new hats and get fixed up with all the goodies.
Try on a flat bill, Mark.
Craig was trying to get me to wear a flat bill earlier. So
if you're listening on iTunes, you might have to look
up. Here is McClelland in a flat bill. What do y'all think?
That's not even that flat.
It's got too much bend in it.
It's got too much bend. I didn't even bend it.
I know. It just naturally has a little bit of curve.
I think it's my head. Everybody tells me my head is a little off shape.
That works.
But yeah, we can wear a flat bill today.
Yeah, maybe we could go back. I mean, you kind of got the Ike thing. Go back with the tags still on it. And all that.
So then we've got Gamakatsu boxes. I mean, they're not brand new, but new boxes from Gamakatsu that you know, allow you to bulk store stuff. You can divide the boxes for crankbaits, topwaters, whatever you want to do with them. You know, Sunline is another company that I work closely with. And again, you know, we've talked about bait design from Spro, and we've talked about it from Big Bite aspect, but I mean, Sunline is one of those companies that every year the research team from Sunline is asking us, what do we want different? What do we want better? And, you know, the new products that Sunline's got this year are basically what the pros have asked for. I mean, you talk about Jason's new line, the 2CFC. You know, it's 12 foot of clear with a foot of orange. So when you're flipping bushes, when you're flipping grass, you can see that line. Then you've got Night FC. Night FC, you know, I've had guys, buddies of mine, ever since Sunline really hit and started getting popular, they're like, man, I love the line, but I can't night fish with it. We've got Night FC now that will glow in a black light.
Have you ever designed a line?
I actually worked with Sunline on a project a couple years. It's probably been 4 years ago now. I helped them develop it was co-branded Cabela's Sunline. Okay. It was the Cabela's FC for All. And essentially what we did with that category of line is, rather than making a guy go into a store and try to decide whether he was going to buy Sniper or whether he was going to buy Shooter,
or Assassin,
we basically made the lines in the categories out of what was best suited.
So what do you do with that? You just talk to the people and say, this is the properties that I want the line
exactly
to have.
You know, so the lower categories, you know, like this, I think it started in 4 or 6 pound test up to 8 pound test. It was line that was developed for spinning rods, you know, and now, you know, the Sniper is going to be what I throw on a spinning rod if I throw fluorocarbon. Most often anymore, I'm throwing braid as my main line on my spinning reel. And then I'm using a fluorocarbon, either Sniper or Shooter leader most of the time. But the new Asagai is unbelievable when it comes to that backing line for your spinning rods.
Side note, that came out last year, and I had to shoot some videos with Todd Faircloth on it. They do not make easily pronounceable
words.
Oh, absolutely
not.
I thought it was a Sagai.
Yeah.
I'm probably wrong on that.
Asagai.
You know that PE8 that they have?
That's good stuff.
Yeah, well, Aaron calls it PE times 8 because there's an X.
Yeah.
And everyone just went, screw it, let them call it that.
Yeah, exactly. And then you come over here to Big Bite. I mean, Big Bite probably made one of the biggest pushes this year than they have in a long time with new bait categories. I mean, we've got the new Kamikaze Craw. Going to be an awesome jig trailer, plastic to flip alone. I mean, there's so many uses for this. New swim worm. I mean, this is one of the things that a lot of us were super excited about. We've got a small, I think it's 5.5 and a 7-inch version of the new swim worm. It's going to be a great bait. We've got the new swim on. We've got a new fat stick from Big Bite.
You know what you could do with that.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, this is one of those baits that I would be putting on a football jig, but it's a fatter, you know, bulkier stick. And then we've got the new smallmouth smasher. And the other thing that we've done is Big Bite has come with the new Big Bite Baits Tour Series plastics. Creed has a tube in the Tour Series plastics. I've got the swim bait, a 3.4 and a 4.4
That's
swim bait.
That's the same tube you were throwing in the one-on-one?
It is the same tube that we were throwing on the one-on-one last year. So if you want to see more characteristics about that tube, just go check it out on the one-on-one. But a lot of cool baits coming from Big Bite. I mean, you know, then we've got the standbys that we released last year, the Buzz Toad and the Buzz Shad. And they've also introduced another line of swim baits this year. So the thing that's cool about it is we have all had input as pros. You know, everybody asks, how does this stuff come to fruition? Very seldomly from the companies that we're here working with this week, and I think that's the reason the guys that we're tied to at this event are with these companies, is because we want to have input. We want to help design. And all these baits come from the input that all of us have given Big Bites, Pro, whoever it is that we're talking about.
All right, I want to go back to the instant feedback. David in Wisconsin wants to know, what trolling motor are you going to be running next year, and was it a tough decision?
You know, for me, it somewhat was, but I've been the one that has stuck with Motor Guide through and throughout. I mean, Motor Guide, you know, throughout time has, you know, built the toughest trolling motor out there. Okay, every company has had a mess up here and there. But, I mean, from the day-to-day use, the Motor Guide, in my opinion, has been the most durable motor out there, and I chose to stay with Motor Guide. The new Motor Guide Tour and the new Motor Guide Tour Pro that I have had the opportunity to run both now, I'm excited about. The ones of you that haven't seen any stuff on them, you know, check it out. We released them at ICAST, and they're going to be solid motors. You know, I think with the one of the big things Motor Guide has always had with the X5 motor is the pinpoint GPS technology of being able to hold with you know, a spot locking feature in a tighter area. And I really believe the Tour Pro is going to allow us to utilize that feature with the pinpoint GPS technology way more effectively than what some of the other companies have to offer. But it's, you know, it's one of those situations. I have maintained a relationship with a lot of sponsors for a lot of years, and I think that's the reason I do have the opportunity to help with design. I mean, a guy that is going to jump from company to company every 2 or 3 years, it's going to be tough to him to get in with a company and actually have input. And to me, I've been with Motor Guide, Mercury, you know, Ranger, or the White River Marine Group for so many years. I get a lot of input, and that's a cool place to be in this day and age.
All right, back to the instant feedback. Brian from Lake Norman wants to know, any chance that you would consider fishing the Opens next year?
You know, probably not the Opens, but I definitely, and in fact, this year I'm even toying with trying to fish a couple of the Northern Costa events.
Two of them left.
There's two left. I know for sure that I'm going to do my best to fish the St. Lawrence just because I love to go up there to that place. And I'm fishing the U.S. Open. You know, I just don't know that. I think the FLW Costas right now are a better fit for my schedule. There's a few more of them in the fall, and that's probably the direction I'm going to look at going.
Well, stay up north. Stay away from the
exactly.
Grand
I want to get up there
Ozarks.
Where they're fishing. Yeah.
Leave those. I mean, just yeah. Leave those so they try to actually give us a shot.
Yeah, I see what you're doing
at
now.
At least give us a shot.
Jeez, yeah. Man. Unbelievable. Yeah. All right. Scott from Indy and several other people, Mike. They really want to know how you would sum up your season. Was this the most
really
difficult season in your career?
We did a whole show on this,
hey,
Mark.
I know, but people may not have seen that show, Matthew, and they want to know.
Yeah. No, honest to goodness, I mean, and I'm not an excuse maker, but, I just wasn't around them all year. I mean, I look back at the live footage after I got knocked out of rounds, and it's just like I zigged when I should have zagged every tournament. I mean, I was at ICAST 2 or 3 weeks ago, stayed with Swindle and Schrader and Andy Morgan, and we're sitting there in the room just jawing about stuff, and Andy popped off something about he couldn't believe how good they were biting a jerkbait at Table Rock I forget if it was the first or second time we were there, and I kind of looked at him. I'm like, you're kidding, right? He's like, he kind of looked at me with that, you know, deer in the headlights look, and he's like, no, dude. He's like, it was so easy up the white, I wasn't in the white that tournament. He's like, well, I saw you up there. And I'm like, well, the day I went up there, I fished shallow. I fished bushes, and I threw a rock crawler, and I caught fish, but I felt like as fast as they were dropping the lake, that deal was going to go away. And he's like, dude, all you had to do was get out there and throw a jerkbait, and they'd eat it up. So I just zigged when I should have zagged all year. You know, it was one of those deals that I've got to get better at the format, and I just got to have a better year. You know, I don't care who you look at throughout the history of fishing, everybody's going to have a rough year every now and then. And this year, unfortunately, happened to be mine in the, you know, inaugural season of the new BBT Tour. So it sucks is what it does.
I mean, Van Dam finished 60th.
Yeah, I mean, he had his shiny moments, though. I never had one of those shiny moments this year. I was on the cut line in three events and just didn't get it done, and I think that would have been a turning point. You know, had I made the cut at Conroe or I think it was the North Carolina event, I think that would have been a turning point. But, man, I got beat down pretty hard in those first three or four events. And then to go to Table Rock, you said it last night or this morning, you had been there for the Costa the week or two previous. You told Dave Rush, dude, anybody that knows how to fish Table Rock is going to be in trouble when the BPT gets here.
I believe the words I said was totally screwed.
Yeah, because there are so many, you know, fish to be caught just running the bank.
GTB. Go
down the bank. And I did some of that, but I didn't do enough of it is what it amounted to.
All right, man. A couple people want to know, what are your thoughts about fishing the U.S. Open?
I'm excited about it. I know a lot of people don't know my history, but I actually fished. The U.S. Open was the first big tournament that I guess I could ever say I fished. I fished it in 86, 87, and I want to say maybe 88. And myself, Keith Brashears, the guy that started War Eagle Custom Lures many years ago, and my dad went out. Keith and I, we basically made an agreement before we went out there that we were all, you know, going to fund the trip. My dad helped fund the trip, but anything we won was just going back into kind of a tournament fund. That's how we fished back then. And Keith won a boat, I want to say 2 years, won a boat for Big Bass. So we had some good trips to the U.S. Open. I actually met, you know, a lot of my, what I would call my, some of my best friends on tour now. I mean, I met Byron Velvick that year in 86, John Murray. I mean, so many guys that are, you know, just such icons in this sport. And it's pretty cool to have the opportunity to go back there. What's that, almost 25 years
all I'm saying is
later and fish the event again. So I'm excited about
it. If you had the opportunity to hang out with Byron Velvick in
you don't
86
want to hear those
in
stories.
Las Vegas.
I'm telling you, you do not want to hear those stories.
That's like the pride. that's like the equivalent for those people of like KVD from 2006 to 2011.
Yeah. It's my mind's getting cluttered even thinking about what was going on back then.
All right, Michael.
So is this the first time you fished it since?
Yes, this is since? The yeah. first time
so what
since
made you,
87.
What made you?
Honest to goodness, the reason I chose to fish it, Littner and I had kind of kicked it around because he fished it last year. And he's like, dude, you ought to come out and fish it. Well, when I was on the show last episode, or the last time I was on your show, was when Billy made the announcement about the big payback.
Yep,
and I just popped off that day and said, hey, hold me a spot. And sure enough, I just paid my balance last week, and I'm fishing it, dude. I'm excited.
That's cool. So what, was it Mark Menendez fishing it too, Mark?
Yeah, yeah.
And Dean's in it, and you're in it.
Littner's
and
fishing.
Littner's in it. And I think, what, Kevin Short, is Steve Kennedy coming back to fish?
I mean, doesn't Aaron always fish it?
Yeah, Aaron. I mean, it's going to be stacked this year, Mark.
Yeah.
It's going to be a cool deal.
I mean, stacked.
Bradley Hallman?
Yeah, Brad Hallman.
Yeah, in fact, I'm staying with Hallman.
Boats.
Yeah, Hallman.
Oh, you're staying with Hallman and Salvucci?
Hallman, Littner, I, and Ken Ma are all staying together.
Salvucci's not?
Is that Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's like, Nick is like the reincarnation of Velvick.
Yeah, pretty much.
In his prime. That's who I had on day one, Mark.
Yeah.
So it'll be a fun trip. But it's all about, you know, I mean, I'm not just going out there to have fun. I'm going out there to try to win the U.S. Open. That's all there is to it.
All right, very cool. All right, man, last question, and then we're going to let you go. What is the best thing about these media events, Michael?
Like, he's about to lie right now.
I want you to be honest.
when it's over.
Now, there's a lot of cool stuff that happens at these media events. You know, when we're at tournament competitions, I mean, yeah, we visit and we talk among ourselves. But, I mean, this is one of those events that everybody just loosens up, has a lot of fun. You know, Crete's going to rag on everybody that's here this weekend. You know, you're going to either go out of here feeling like a hero or that you've been beat down to all degrees by Crete. And, you know, you just get to spend some cool time with a lot of guys. I mean, you know, it's cool to bounce these development ideas off of all these guys. And a lot of that talk goes on here, too. You know, what can we do next? What can we design next? And it's a cool week. But like Matt said, I do like the end of these things. It's awesome to go on.
All right, Matthew, we are going to be back at 8 o'clock Central Time p.m. for a second show. Who knows what's going to happen?
Tonight? I thought we were just doing it Tuesday and Wednesday.
No, tonight.
You're on the hook, dude.
Seriously? I think we have a
date on tonight?
No, we're going to have them on Tuesday and Wednesday. Okay, we'll talk about
it. We'll figure it out.
I put it on the schedule, man. The promo's out there. Yeah, 8 o'clock tonight.
We'll figure it out, dude.
I mean, have
I'm
ever
planning on
know
it.
What the schedule was on anything?
All right, 8 o'clock tonight.
I was going to Winona. That was literally it.
Mike, you know, great to see you again, man. Hey, we talk about you a lot on this show.
Oh, I'm sure you do after the year I had. I just want to know, and I asked Matt again, I'm ready for fish and chips to come back.
I know. I'm working on it. I really am. For 2020, I'm working on it. All right? Okay. I gotta wait for your schedule to come out, and I'm going to try and work it around the event once the schedule comes out. But, yes, that is definitely on my checklist to get done, hopefully, for 2020.
Good to hear.
All right, Matthew, I'll talk to you tonight, 8 o'clock, folks. Tomorrow, Todd Faircloth. Wednesday, Aaron Martins. Everybody be safe. We are out of here.
See you.